Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 4 of the Shelleybrook MP Team Podcast. You're here with me, Mr. Southwell, and Mr. Nash is here this morning.
Good morning.
That noise you can hear is Mr. Nash chomping on the remainder of his final Easter egg. So he's getting in some last-minute energy before the show starts.
Yeah, before we talk about energy.
Yeah, so he's burning off whilst he's going to be doing the show today. What are we talking about today?
We are looking at energy balance. We've been looking at food and energy for the last few weeks, mainly for the BTEC National students here. I think it's because we've said over and over again, it's such a big area, and as with a lot of subjects within PE, but this one's got so much information, and it's really going to help those BTEC nationals if they're listening to this podcast, listening to what's going on in lesson, and then you've got two places, you're getting information, ready to do your next task and so forth. And I know me and you, Mr. Southwell, have talked about with our BTEC nationals looking at a few practicals over the next coming weeks,
yep.
And this is the sort of information they're going to need to know, need to be ready with, so they can do those practicals with minimal fuss.
Yeah, this is our prep, really, for when we go into doing those practicals, and we want to talk about some of the statistical things behind it, and a bit about how your body burns off energy for different types of people.
Yeah.
So if we dive straight in and look at the measures, we kind of covered them a little bit, but I suppose we can add a little bit of context.
We did, didn't we? We talked about what a calorie and was, things like that, but the definitions of those, if we look at calories, now calories is the energy required to raise 1 gram of water by 1 degree.
Yeah, and that's all about burning something off. So it's basically the body's equivalent of boiling that and then, and then using it. Joules that you've got, 1 joule of energy moves a massive 1 gram of velocity at 1 meter per second. And you're looking at about 4.2 joules is equal to 1 calorie. So you can make these equations. We're not going to be testing you on those equations, but it just puts it into a little bit more context about it as well.
And then you've got kilocalorie. So we've had calories, and now you've got kilocalorie. And the energy required to raise 1 kilogram of water by 1,000 degrees. All right, and this is what's referred to as calories. So when you see that on packages and things, you've got that kilocalorie. How much energy is required to raise 1 kilogram of water by 1,000 degrees.
And then finally got kilojoules. Again, that's a unit of measurement for energy, and it's used for sort of smaller measurements as well. And it just shows you how much these things are all about burning off different substances, right? And how much effort it's going to take the body to be able to produce that much energy to be able to do it.
Yeah. So if we looked at sort of converting those and what each one meant, we would say that 1 calorie equals 4.2 joules.
It would change food packaging massively if we convert it to that.
Yeah, and you suddenly see a much higher number and scare people more so.
You have kilocalories of 4.2 kilojoules, so it's a subscript equation.
And if you look at 1 kilocalorie, kcal, you would see this on packaging, is equivalent to 1,000 calories.
And then the kilojoules is 1,000 kilojoules, it's a kilojoule. That's what we're going to call them. Okay, really simple stuff, but things that we need to know just when we move on to our practical experiments.
So with these, the main fuels that come from that we get in our body come from things like fats, carbohydrates.
Yep.
So this is where we're going to find our calories. That's how we're going to be burning energy. So we need those fats, we need those carbohydrates going on our diet to keep functioning. And we spoke last week about things like Bear Grylls is the island.
Yep.
And where you're seeing people who are using up their body's fats or have used their body fats within a month of time on that island. There's no carbohydrates. They're eating 200 calories a day. They're struggling to function. So that's why we need those sorts of things to be able to keep going.
And that also counts on the muscle side of things as well. The amount and the intensity that you exercise at is directly proportional to the amount of energy used as well. So if you lead a fairly sedentary lifestyle, you're not going to be burning much off. You're not going to be working out those muscle groups or burning off those different fuels you're putting into it. If you don't replace that, your muscles will be unable to maintain a work rate.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to think about. So it's all about this balance. And I think we'll go back to that idea of your credit card, your body's credit card. You add into that balance, you're taking away from that balance all the time.
I mean, a few of the BTEC nationals may have experienced it when you've exercised so hard for such a long period of time, you've not eaten enough energy, you just feel like you just can't keep going, your muscles can't get going. I think about some of the children who've done Duke of Edinburgh at school, you know, especially silver, gold, things like that, where you've actually kept going for a long period of time. You may not have brought the right nutrition. You know, you may not have eaten that nutrition, might not have felt great the next day.
Pringles, mainly.
Yeah. And then you're realising that you haven't got the energy going in, your muscles are hurting, you feel tired, you just can't keep going.
And that's really important. That's the bit that's most important. You're putting in the right substances for it. You're eating at right times during the day as well. And again, we're going to apply some more context to that. We're going to look at different body types and body shapes as well to go with it.
Yeah, we've got these are the standard body types that the BTEC National talk about. We talk about BTEC Key Stage 4 as well, and if you've done GCSE, you've talked about them. We've got the three different somata types. So we've got the endomorph, the mesomorph, and the ectomorph.
Very different in to look at, very different sort of shapes, but they're also sort of, they've got personality traits and characteristics that link to different sports and different types of people. So if we start at the bottom end of the scale, look at an ectomorph, what are we going to be seeing?
Well, an ectomorph is a very skinny, tall person, the extreme of that.
Peter Crouch.
This is really sad. This is how I remember from being at school. And a lot of people won't actually even make a reference to this. When I was at school and I did my GCSEs, previous to that, years before, there was Ghostbusters was big. Right? And one of the Ghostbusters, Egon, was a tall, skinny guy.
Yeah.
And that's how I remembered Ecto, because their vehicle was called Ecto-1.
Nice.
And so Ectomorph is the Egon of the Ghostbusters world. That's how I remembered it.
Wow.
I'm sharing a little bit of life stories.
That's some life story there. things we'll see, like I said, tall, skinny person, narrow shoulders and hips, narrow chest and abdomen, thin arms and legs, high forehead, receding chin, very little muscle, very little fat.
Yeah.
Okay, very at one end of the thing.
Brilliant at things like high jump.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, probably distance events as well.
Yeah.
When you move into that middle scale, we've got our mesomorphs. And what are we going to see in our mesomorphs?
We're going to see Mr. Nash.
Yep.
We're going to see a triangular-shaped sort of upper body, really. I think you've got that broad shoulders, narrow hips, very muscular. Body fat, minimal fat on the body, just more about muscle.
Yep, and then they're going to be the guys that are going to play contact sports, majority of them. Okay, yeah. That's what you tend to see. If you look out on the football pitch, 11v11, majority of them are mesomorphs. Then we go to the top end of the scale, which is our endomorphs. What are we going to see there?
Now, endomorphs are going to be, and I remember my endomorphs is how I used to remember it, the doe in the middle, doughy people.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're looking at pear-shaped body, a lot of body fat, quite big.
Rounded head.
Minimal neck.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of extreme endomorph.
And we're probably looking at your wrestlers for that as well, I'd imagine. They're the ones, aren't
they? Yeah, yeah.
Your sumo wrestlers.
Your sumo wrestlers are going to be out there doing that. What's interesting, when I read the GCSE answers recently for a mock that we did, people put endomorph as prop in rugby. Now, those days have gone.
Yeah.
You know, the days of when rugby wasn't a professional sport and things, you might have seen slightly bigger guys were just heavy and just holding their own and using their weight to survive. But it's not the case nowadays, and it's important to have an extreme example. So something like sumo wrestling is an extreme example of an endomorph.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the things to consider as well is I'd put these three different body types, somatotypes, onto a triangle.
Yes.
And you can be between different body types, not just in one category.
Yeah.
Some sportsmen are really, really good at going from an ectomorph and trying to take characteristics of a mesomorph. So if you're trying to make a weight for your sport, I think about the boxers.
Mm.
Some of them, look at Amir Khan, who got knocked out this weekend. He's gone up two weight divisions. He's had to put on a lot of muscle mass to be able to do that as well. So he's had to change his body shape almost.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do because some of those things are ingrained into you.
And that's where nutrition plays a massive part, doesn't it? Because it's not going to be about weight training and lifting more weight to build more muscle necessarily. It's going to be trying to put that weight on, put that energy in the system so that you can go and train harder. We've talked about previously people like Britain's Strongest Man, Eddie Hall, when he's the amount of food he's eating in a daily intake, 10,000 calories just to maintain where he's going.
Yep.
There's an incredible amount of food to go inside, and it's not easy to eat.
No.
So to do that and go up two weight categories would have been real dedication.
Yeah, it's a real adaptation to
And I bet he's probably quite sick of food right now.
Yeah, to be fair, I bet he's sick of everything at the moment. When we look at these different sorts of energies, energy balance, burning it off, we have to think about our percentage body fat.
Mm.
It's a risky figure because people can take it in a number of ways. If they've got a really high percentage body fat, they assume that it's all trouble and it's all no good. To some extent, that's true. But when we look at it, at percentage body fat, we are looking at the amount of fat inside your body.
Yeah.
So if we're able to take all of the different parts of you out, if we put a set of fat on the scales, that is how much fat is inside your body.
Yeah. So we know that to do that, we've almost got to work out what our lean body mass is.
Yep.
So within our body, we've got bone. There's water, there's all those connective tissues, the organ tissues, the digestive system, things like that. And the essential and then the sort of the non-essential fats can start to be pulled apart.
Yeah, you can take those things out of your body, but you're going to have them. There's no getting away from them. Your body percent,
you will have to have fats to survive.
Yeah, you can have no choice to do it at all. Mm. You're going to need to know how to measure percentage body fat as well, which again links back to your BTEC work and GCSE work as well.
Yeah.
Skin fold analysis, biometrical impedance analysis and hydrodensitometry you can look at as well.
Yeah.
Two methods are a bit more realistic than hydrodensitometry because you need specialist equipment for that.
Mm.
But it's a very easy way of telling, of sort of maybe getting an idea of the body shape of somebody And if you're looking at their nutrition and planning out their nutrition, a bit about what they're going to need as well.
Yeah, and it's the thing with the measuring methods is to remember things like skin fold analysis is good. It requires somebody to know what they're doing and to do it correct, because you can make errors with that very easily. And the bioelectrical impedance analysis, the problem with those is, you know, if I've hydrated really well that day, it's going to give me a different reading to if I've not drunk any water that day.
That machine's not got a camera on it.
No, and so it doesn't necessarily give you a perfect, but it does give you, if you're using it to monitor body content, you can use it as a regular analysis tool to sort of track progress, as long as it's taken at roughly the same time, roughly the same sort of hydration.
Yeah, and if the guys in the class are all using the same sort of client to do it on,
yeah,
and the same method, that's not going to be absolutely fine as well. So we always come back to this idea of energy balance. We have to look at what energy balance is. It's made up of four different things. Definition of energy balance is when you're taking as much food and drink energy as you've expended. That's the idea. We're keeping that credit card system, what's come in, what's gone out, etc.
And if that balance isn't quite right, you're going to have different changes to the body.
Yeah, first.
Go
on, you're going to say.
I was going to say, you've got those, you know, you've got calories, too many calories going in, we're going to put weight on.
Yeah.
And we go back to what we've talked about previously. Not enough calories, we're going to lose weight.
Yeah, always keep that credit card balance in you. Now, we're going to look at four things that make up energy balance. And the first of those we covered a bit last week, which was rest and metabolic rate. Do you want to give us a quick summary, Mr. Nash?
Well, we spoke a little bit about it last week, didn't we? And about that, what's your body burning whilst resting. So that resting metabolic rate can account for about 60 to 75% of your total energy output for that day. Okay, so if you're looking at a day, just by us sitting in here now talking, our food is going to account for 60 to 75% of that, just to keep us ticking over. It's obviously going to be influenced by what we talked about earlier on, lean body mass. If we've got a higher muscle mass within the body, that's going to require more energy to function well. And so I'm going to need more calories going in to enable my body to just work.
Okay, so we covered that last week. The few terms now we're not going to have heard of before. One of those is dietary thermogenesis, and that talks about the energy expanded above your resting metabolic rate, and it's all aids the process of digestion and transportation and the storage of food in the body. All are very influenced by your calorie content. If you take in high energy foods and you've got a regular eating pattern, that really helps regulate dietary thermogenesis. Okay, yeah. It's really good. If you've got a very steady pattern, your 3 or 4 meals a day, whatever you decide to do, that works really well. If you skip meals and put yourself on a restrictive diet, that's going to lead to sort of poor dietary thermogenesis. That's going to be poor. If you eat at odd times of the day, if you don't have consistent meals, etc., that's going to do that.
The system's not going to be functioning as well. It's not going to burn that energy as well. And so you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
So, yeah, by having regular input of foods and keeping your calories regular and at the right sort of levels, it's definitely going to help with that.
It's that regulation for what you're putting into your body as well.
Now, we've talked about this over and over again. Physical activity represents the most variable component of any energy expenditure. Me and you sat here now, we're burning very little on the front, other than me occasionally picking up a cup of tea.
Yeah, this particular moment,
But I know today, in the school that we work at, it's a large school.
Third of a mile long.
Yeah, third of a mile long, and I've got lessons in 3 different locations. I'm going to be moving quite a lot today.
Yeah.
So there's going to be quite a lot of walking around the school. So even though I've just tucked into a couple of little chocolates this morning, I know by break time that's going to be burnt off.
Yeah.
Because we're constantly moving around. Plus, in our job, we've got physical jobs. You're PE teachers. You're out there on the field. You're walking, doing things. You're involved in physical activity. Not to the extent of I'm running around with the kids. I don't want to preach that.
I'm not quite there yet.
But, we have... We have to take that into account. If I was looking at my dietary input and looking at how maybe I wanted to change things to improve, I've to lose weight, to gain weight, I've got to take in what is my lifestyle like. Have I got a sedentary lifestyle? Have I got an active lifestyle?
You've got to take into account different days will do different things.
Yeah.
After school tonight, I've got a football fixture tonight, so that'll be additional time.
Yeah.
Being stood on your feet, moving around. Then tonight, we're obviously the main stars of the touch rugby team for the school
of course, so that's going to
burn off another few calories as well. But that's a regular thing, so you can plan that into your diet. You know that's going to be going on for the next few weeks.
Yeah.
If you have a sketchy diet, do lots of physical activity 1 week, not so much the next. That's all going
to
play a part.
It's hard to build up a regular pattern then.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough. We then got to look at what's called adaptive thermogenesis as well. That's all about the energy expenditure that occurs as a result of the physiological stresses placed on your body. Okay, it's really important. Anything that happens, like a change in temperature, shivering are all examples of where that can happen. Yeah. And if you go from one extreme to another, if you think about, like, it's still quite warm out at the moment, but it's pouring down with rain, you're still going to be really hot outside, even though your body thinks you're going to get colder because of the rain. That can be a really, that's an adaptation your body's got to be able to make.
And that's going to need calories, it's going to need energy to make that change.
Yeah, I mean, this weekend, we had a beautiful weekend, it was like 27, 28 degrees. I worked really hard, I was out in for most of the weekend doing stuff. Didn't want to take anything on board, just wanted water and didn't want drinks, didn't actually want to eat much at all. So your body's adapting to that. Even in those conditions, you still have to need to put that energy in because you're actually burning off more during that time as well, which is really important.
So energy balance, again, we have come back to this, and this is what this topic's all been about, isn't it? It's that, you know, if you take on more calories than energy you burn, your weight is going to be gained. And we keep going back to it. But that is, it is sometimes as simple as that. If we take on less energy, we'll lose weight. And if we exercise more and we eat less, we'll lose weight quicker. And it's about, if we were going to be a physical trainer and help someone who wanted to lose weight, it wouldn't be do all straight away. It's minor changes to your diet, trying to bring things in line. That's what I would preach anyway. I'm not a big fan of fad diets where suddenly you're just going to lose 500 calories a day. You're going to exercise for 500 calories and there you go, you've got a 1,000 calorie.
Yeah, it's unsustainable.
It's unsustainable. I like minor changes that people can do for lifelong change.
Yeah,
And that's what I would preach as a PT instructor. If I was one of those, if I'm working with anyone and helping students at school talk about trying to lose weight or anything or get fitter, they're the sort of information. That's the sort of information that I would give.
I think that's a really, really clear definition of energy balance. I think that sort of brings the topic to a close. Mm. There's only really a few little factors that we need to talk about that affect energy balance as a whole. Then I think that really cleans that entire topic up.
We're done.
So the things that will affect your energy balance are your age.
Yep.
I think it's fair to say as you get a little bit older,
you need to bring your calorie content down, probably because you're not doing as much.
Yeah.
You know, that's that.
And by age, we're not talking about late 20s, early 30s. We're talking later on in life. We're talking 50, 60, into your 70s as well. Climate can be a big factor of that.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the weekend, having a hot weekend, it can turn you off of food, but you still need to put that energy inside inside your body. It can make you just crave water.
A lot of countries adapt to that already. Yeah. When you go onto the continent, into the Mediterranean, you sort of find people go out later for dinner just because the temperature's different, the climate's different.
Definitely.
Lifestyle plays a big part.
Physical activity is important. You know, physical activity, we've talked about again and again. If we need to look at, if we're working with someone or looking at someone's energy expenditure, how much activity are they doing?
Yeah.
How involved are they in sport? Just getting around? Is their job active, as we've mentioned?
And we have to come to gender as well, where I think this is probably one where the women have got it slightly harder because the men sort of lose their, well, in fact, probably men have got it harder. Their energy seems to just deplete really quickly, whereas women are able to keep it on board a little bit better than men are. It doesn't come out of their systems as easy as it does to the men. And I look at our Bear Grylls example, where the men just flaked out completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So women store that. But again, remember, women also store fat a lot easier than men and energy a lot easier than men do as well.
And the last one we talked about in last week's session was the basal metabolic rate, where everyone's got their BMR, okay? So you've got your basic amount of calories that your body's going to burn just to function. And we've got to take that into consideration. And that thing that brings in things like weight, height, muscle mass, so how your body functions. So if I've got a very muscular person, they're going to need more calories just to keep their energy as it is. So or keep their weight and their body function as it is. And I need to take that into consideration if I was looking at how to change their energy balance.
That's awesome. I think that's everything we can do on energy balance now.
I think we've covered this topic in depth over the last few weeks.
We have, we've covered it a lot. So, in preparation for next week, we're going to ask that if you want us to cover anything in particular, then we're going to ask you to tweet the PE team anything that you want us to do for next week. Otherwise, we'll come up with another area. We might focus maybe on GCSE, because that's obviously coming up
soon.
Well. Any topics coming up, anything you need a bit of help on, then tweet us and we'll put a podcast together for that one for next week.
Brilliant.
We'll see you guys next week.
See you later.